Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious, essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive.
Today, well, we're doing something a bit different. We're not just looking back at history.
No, we're holding up a mirror, aren't we? A rather large medieval one.
Exactly. A mirror to our own anxieties, our own times. We're tackling Barbara Tuchman's huge Pulitzer-winning book, A Distant Mirror, The Calamitous 14th Century.
Yes. It's definitely one of those history books that, well, everyone curious about the past and present should know something about.
Mm-hmm.
And our mission today
is to figure out why Tuchman picked the 14th century. I mean, it was a period of almost complete breakdown, wasn't it? Plague, war, religious chaos.
Total chaos. And she uses it explicitly as a way to understand the instabilities of our own world.
Because the core idea, really, is that how humans react when things fall apart. The denial, the panic, finding scapegoats.
Uh-huh.
That stays pretty consistent. Doesn't matter if it's the 14th century or today. It's quite humbling, really, and maybe a little comforting to know we're not the first ones to feel like the world's spinning out of control.
Yeah, give you that long view.
It provides some deep context. So we're looking for those insights Tuchman found, insights into resilience, but also human folly, by tracing this, well, just unrelenting period of crisis. Okay, let's get into it. First off, you can't really understand the book without understanding the author, Barbara Tuchman. She lived from 1912 to 1989, quite a force.
And not a typical academic historian.
Not at all. Entirely self-trained, amazingly, but she still won the Pulitzer Prize twice.
That's incredible. And I think that lack of maybe strict academic training was actually her strength.
Oh, absolutely. She called herself a literary historian. For her, it was about the story, the narrative, the human drama, and importantly, the moral weight of events.
Making dense history feel alive, accessible.
Exactly. Not just dry analysis. She wanted history to resonate, to connect with people's actual lives.
And didn't her first Pulitzer kind of set the stage for this, The Guns of August?
It did. That book was all about the start of World War I. She spent ages dissecting how these rigid, supposedly brilliant military and political systems just failed.
Yeah.
Spectacularly.
Because of incompetence, groupthink?
Cognitive dissonance, yeah. Leaders just not seeing reality. And that deep dive into political folly, into how grand systems collapse, whether it's Europe in 1914 or the feudal system in the 1300s.
She brought that same critical eye to the medieval world.
Precisely. Connecting the mistakes of the past to the things she was seeing in her own lifetime.
Okay, so let's dive into this calamitous century. The distant mirror idea. Tuchman says it reflects our times because it was just relentless, overlapping disasters.
That's right. You've got the Hundred Years' War grinding on.
Which was incredibly brutal. Then the Great Schism in the Church.
Yeah, where suddenly there are two popes, then even three, all calling each other the Antichrist. Imagine the confusion.
Total spiritual crisis. And then the big one overshadowing everything.
The Black Death.
It's just such a vast canvas of disaster. How does she even make that readable?
Well, that was her genius. She found an anchor, a specific person to follow through all the chaos, the French nobleman, Enguerrand de Coucy II.
De Coucy. Right. He becomes like our guide through this nightmare landscape.
Exactly. He lived from 1340 to 1397, so smack bang in the middle of it all.
Yeah.
He was this really powerful French lord, a top warrior, you know, very respected.
But he also had connections everywhere, didn't he?
Critically, yes. He was son-in-law to the King of England, so his life just naturally intersected with everything, diplomacy, war, even that last doomed crusade.
So by following him, his personal story,
Tuchman brings coherence to what would otherwise be just overwhelming catastrophe. It makes it human scale.
Okay, let's talk about the catastrophes themselves, starting with the one that really blew the era apart, the Black Death. We hear the numbers a third, maybe even half of Europe wiped out. But Tuchman focuses on the immediate shock, the social, the psychological fallout.
Yeah, she paints a really visceral picture of the trauma. Society just fractured. You had these extreme reactions. On one side, this intense piety.
Like the flagellants.
Exactly. Groups traveling around, whipping themselves in public, trying to appease God because they thought the plague was divine punishment.
But then the complete opposite reaction too. Like, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die.
Precisely. Total hedonism, anything goes, living for the moment because, well, the future seemed canceled. Moral rules just dissolved for many.
And that breakdown, that fear, it turned ugly, didn't it?
Oh, horrifically ugly, because nobody understood where the plague came from. The fear curdled into blame, and the main target, tragically, was Jewish communities.
Scapegoated, blamed for poisoning wells.
Yeah.
Horrific massacres.
Sickening. A real stain on the era.
But Tuchman also points out a longer-term, almost revolutionary impact, right?
Yeah.
Economically.
Yes, because suddenly, labor was incredibly scarce. If half the workers are gone.
The survivors have bargaining power.
Exactly. Peasants could demand higher wages, better conditions. It completely destabilized the old feudal system, the manor economy. You get the simmering class tension that shapes the next century.
So if the common people were reeling, what about the institutions? The church, the nobility, the pillars of society, how did they hold up?
Tuchman shows they were crumbling too, often under their own weight, their own contradictions. Mm. The most obvious failure was the church. That great schism starting in 1378.
Having rival popes denouncing each other, it must have just shattered people's faith.
It was catastrophic for the church's legitimacy. I mean, the spiritual heart of Europe becomes this political battlefield funded by the tithes of the faithful. It completely undermined the very institution people needed for guidance through the plague.
And at the same time, the other pillar, the nobility, the warrior class.
Right.
They weren't doing much better.
No, they were failing spectacularly in their primary role, protection. They were supposed to be the defenders of society.
But they kept getting beaten in battle, humiliated even. Thinking of battles like Poitiers in 1356.
Right, where the French king himself gets captured by the English. Imagine the shock.
So public humiliation plus crushing taxes to pay for these failed wars.
It was a deadly mix. The nobility looked incompetent and greedy, self-serving. And that, Tuchman argues, directly fueled these explosions of popular rage.
Like the Jacquerie in France.
Exactly. The peasant revolt in 1358. It was brutal, savage, didn't last long. But Tuchman uses it to show this complete breakdown of trust, this chasm opening up between the rulers and the ruled.
So you have this incompetence, this institutional failure, this rage simmering. Where does Tuchman see this chaos reaching its sort of symbolic endpoint?
For that, we really have to look at the Battle of Nicopolis in 1396. This was supposed to be a great crusade, the last big one of the century. And Enguerrand de Coucy, our guide,
it was there.
He was captured there and died in captivity soon after.
And Tuchman sees this battle as more than just a military loss, right? It's bigger than that for her.
Oh, absolutely. It's symbolic. The French knights, full of arrogance and this outdated idea of chivalric glory, they just charged recklessly.
Ignoring advice, tactics.
Completely, right into the well-prepared Ottoman Turkish forces. Yeah. And they were utterly destroyed, annihilated. So Nicopolis, for Tuchman, becomes this powerful metaphor. It's the death of the chivalric ideal itself, this beautiful, elaborate code of honor.
Proved totally useless, self-destructive even.
Exactly. When faced with a pragmatic, disciplined enemy, the glorious ideals just collapsed. They failed the ultimate test. And this is why Tuchman's book still resonates, I think, because she pulls out these core patterns from all that mess. One huge theme is what she calls the chasm between ideal and reality.
You mean what people said they believed in honor, piety, duty, versus how they actually behaved?
Yes. The plunder, the massacres, the naked self-interest, the corruption in the church, all happening while everyone's talking about chivalry and faith. That hypocrisy, she argues, created this deep, pervasive cynicism, a spiritual sickness.
People felt let down, lied to by their leaders, their institutions.
Constantly. And tied into that is another key Tuchman theme, the persistence of human folly.
Ah, like those French knights at Nicopolis.
Yeah.
Just repeating the same mistakes, charging ahead despite proof it doesn't work.
Exactly. It echoes her work on World War I, leaders unable or unwilling to adapt to reality. It's like large-scale cognitive dissonance playing out across history.
But it wasn't all just bleakness and failure, was it? There's a sense of transition, too.
Yes, that's the third crucial theme. This awful disruption, this violence, was actually a violent period of transition. The chaos, terrible as it was, forced change.
Like the Black Death speeding up the end of serfdom.
Right. New economic realities emerged. New ways of warfare were rendering the old knightly class obsolete. The old world was dying, painfully, agonizingly.
So a new one could eventually be born.
Exactly. The seeds of the Renaissance of the modern world were being sown in that chaos.
The book is just full of these really sharp observations, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ideas that really stick in your mind. Maybe we can share a couple that capture the psychological weight of the era.
Definitely. Tuchman really got inside the heads of the survivors. She wrote, and this is powerful, that survivors of the plague, seeing they weren't destroyed but also weren't somehow improved or purified by it, they could discover no divine purpose in the pain they had suffered.
Oh, wow. That's devastating. If the suffering is meaningless, then the whole religious framework.
Yeah.
It just feels random, cruel.
It led to what Techman called a kind of dementia of despair. Like the future itself had just evaporated, a loss of hope on a massive scale.
Chilling. And what are her view on how crisis affects character?
Well, she had a pretty stark, maybe even cynical view there. She says, very bluntly, catastrophe does not ennoble, it reveals.
The crises don't make us better people.
Not necessarily.
Yeah.
She argues they just strip away the social niceties, the pretense. They amplify what's already there, both the good and the bad, the nobility and the baseness that exists in people anyway.
Okay, so taking all this and this look back at chaos, folly, survival, what does it mean for us now? For you, the listener, trying to navigate today's world, the connections seem pretty direct.
They really are. Think about modern crisis response. Techman's description of the Black Death, the scale of it, the fear, the rampant misinformation.
The search for scapegoats?
Exactly. The economic disruption, the way trust in authority just evaporated. Doesn't that sound eerily familiar after our recent experiences with the COVID-19 pandemic?
It really does. It's like a historical blueprint for how societies react when faced with something terrifying and unknown.
And then there's the point about institutional trust. That's a huge warning from the 14th century.
Yeah, the collapse of the papacy's credibility, the failures of the nobility.
It shows just how fragile legitimacy is. When people see their core institutions, whether they're political, religious, financial, as self-serving, incompetent, or both.
Popular rage isn't far behind. And maybe institutional collapse.
It's a recurring pattern. But the final takeaway isn't all doom and gloom, is it? It's also about resilience.
Right. Tuckman's long perspective shows that even though the 14th century was unbelievably bleak, humanity did survive. Society transformed.
The chaos was terrible, but it was also a catalyst. It forced adaptation. It reminds you that people have felt like it's the end of the world many, many times before.
And yet, here we are. Societies find ways to reinvent themselves.
It encourages that longer view, maybe a bit of perspective on our own turbulent times.
You know, for me, the thing I really loved, the thing that makes the book work so well, is that central metaphor, the distant mirror, and using Angeran de Cusy to take this vast, confusing, horrifying period plague, war, schism, all of it, and make it feel immediate, human. She connects their anxieties right back to ours.
I totally agree. And I think the most valuable lesson is just that. Recognizing the continuity in human behavior. It's humbling, isn't it?
Yeah.
To realize our confusion, our sense of crisis, our feeling let down by leaders, it's not new. It's happened before. And knowing that, maybe it allows us to look at our present moment with a bit more humility, a bit more nuance.
Understanding the patterns of folly, but also resilience.
Exactly. So let me leave you, the listener, with maybe a final thought to wrestle with, inspired by Techman. The leaders and knights of the 14th century kept repeating their mistakes, trapped by old ideas, even when faced with catastrophic failure. So here's the question. Does all our modern technology, our instant information, actually make us more adaptable? Or does it just mean we can repeat the follies of the past even faster?
Oof, that's a tough one. Especially thinking about Tuckman's idea that catastrophe reveals character. It doesn't automatically improve it. Something to definitely think about.
Indeed.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acacia Foundation.